The events of January 6th last year continued to be hotly debated by some partisans. Who did it? Whose fault is it? Well, what does the videotape show? A short film by the New York Times culls thousands of hours of protester videos, police body cam footage, and audio. And it shows the moment when the crowd breaks past police to swarm up the stairs and into the west doors of the Capitol. The film is called Day of Rage, and Malachi Brown co-directed and produced the film. He's senior producer with the New York Times Visual Investigations team. Malachi Brown, welcome.
Thanks very much, Scott.
Now, one central question still being asked in this country is who the rioters were. Right? There's some data from arrests that suggests a lot of them were not affiliated with groups like Proud Boys, with Oath Keepers. What did you learn about the identities and the leaders at key moments on January 6th?
Certainly, there were several far-right extremist groups present, but you also had a large number of ordinary Trump supporters. I mean, the majority of the crowd were ordinary Trump supporters who believed in the baseless claim that the election had been stolen and were there to protest, what they felt was a stolen election. And then you had what some people describe as radicalized normies. So people who are unaffiliated with these groups, but came prepared for violence. I mean, there were several hundred people, and you could see from how they were prepared that they were there for trouble. And it was that sort of combustible mix of the far-right extremist groups who were ginning up the crowd, people who were prepared for violence, and then just ordinary Trump supporters who got swept up in the moment and kind of follow the herd, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Now, what struck me is some of the footage you have of the rioters even before President Trump spoke early in that day. Let's take a listen.
We're storming the Capitol.
We are going to the Capitol, where our problems are. It's that direction.
Now, that first protester voice says we're storming the Capitol, and we hear that elsewhere in your video. And the second person seems to be giving directions. Is there some evidence here from the video you've aggregated that this was planned?
From watching all of the footage, it was very clear that a subset of the crowd that was there, it was well understood among them that they were going to go to the Capitol and they were going to protest, if not try to stop the certification of the election inside the Capitol. And that was really clear, even on the evening beforehand. All of a sudden, you had people who had been consuming this vitriol that was spilling out in online circles, calls to storm the Capitol, well in advance. I think there were a million mentions of storm the Capitol on social media before the riot. And then you had, all of these people arriving in the real world, coalescing in one place, one focal point. And Trump's allies in the night beforehand really using militant rhetoric and amping it up even more, saying that we bleed for freedom, we will sacrifice for freedom, this is going to be their destruction. And so there was certainly a number of people who were angling for what happened.
Now, there's a pivotal moment in that day, and your video kind of highlights that, when the mob began to take the stairs on the west side of the Capitol. This led to the initial breach. What did you learn from the footage, from the audio, about how that unfolded?
The whole thing is a domino effect, really. There's an initial spark of violence at the northwest side of the Capitol, where there are just five Capitol police officers guarding an access route, and they're overrun pretty easily by hundreds of protesters. And then it becomes really violent up on the steps, the west side of the Capitol, and this sort of bandstand that's up there. There was a line of police holding off the rioters at that point when some of them saw underneath the scaffolding that there was a staircase, a small little doorway. The scaffolding was erected for the upcoming inauguration of Joe Biden. And so they went that way and used a bullhorn to direct other rioters in that direction. And after some time, they overwhelmed the police there again. And although there was another line of police in the scaffolding, they overwhelmed them. There was a brutal fight for about 15 minutes there. It was a hammer produced. The police were bear sprayed, and they just, had to retreat. And then at this stage, there were people climbing up through the scaffolding as well. It's almost like they were scaling this building like a medieval siege, and then rushed up the stairs to an upper terrace where there were dozens of doors and windows. And again, another thin line of police who buckled after just a minute. And then they were in.
Now, speaking of the Capitol Police, you got audio and footage of police reacting on that day, including a man named Robert Glover of the Metropolitan Police, and we hear him calling for help, for backup. Let's take a listen.
We cannot hold this without more munitions or more manpower.
Malachi, what did you learn about Metro and Capitol Police and their desperate calls for backup, and whether and when it came?
What we learned was, from looking at the footage prior to the riot, was that the rank and file of the Capitol Police were, you know, badly served by their leadership, because the leadership failed to heed warnings from intelligence agencies and others that there could be violence. And it was very sparsely manned and they didn't have riot gear. And so they were easily overcome. They also hadn't prepared, for a riot. They didn't know how to unlock riot equipment. And they had been told to withhold their stronger crowd-controlled munitions. And so they were at sea very quickly, called for backup. The Metro Police arrive, and the Metro Police riot control unit arrives, and they start deploying some of their weapons, and then more of them come. But there was little coordination between Metro and Capitol. The Metro Police Inspector, Robert Glover, who's taking command, you hear taking command there, he's calling for, you know, Capitol to let them know where they should back up to when they're, you know, they're even about to buckle and lose the line. One thing about the Capitol Police is, you know, they fought valiantly that day. You know, they put themselves and their bodies on the line. Over 150 of them were injured in the days afterwards. A couple of them died. So they did what they could on the day, and they felt helpless against a mob of thousands.
Can you talk a little bit about how you got this, how you managed to get this footage and hold on to it even as protesters sought to delete it from the internet?
Well, we were monitoring it. Some of our team were monitoring the riot as it was happening, or before it became a riot. And once it started to turn into a riot and a significant event, more of us started to look at it, and we started, you know, watching the live streams that were out there. I think it was about 35 live streams, many of them 4 hours, some of them 6-8 hours long. And they really kind of allowed us to navigate the path of the rioters around the building and through the building. In addition to that, there was about 2,000 or 3,000 videos, actually more than 3,000 videos, now that I think of it, of video clips that were uploaded by the rioters onto Parler, Twitter, Telegram, other platforms. And we very quickly realized we were going to be overwhelmed. We've never had as much content. And so we brought on an archivist really quickly, anticipating that rioters would understand that this material was going to incriminate themselves and delete it. And that's what happened. But also, you know, using C-SPAN footage, photographs from wire agencies that had metadata in them, contacting some of the rioters actually, and getting their original files. So all of this really helped with our chronology. In addition to that, then, you know, we obviously had to interview witnesses, lawmakers, their staff, Capitol Police, even the Capitol Architect. You know, we identified at least 8 places where the rioters had broken into the building, and we wanted to understand where they led and the vulnerabilities that were there. So we talked to his office as well.
What a project. Just finally, what was it like for you kind of viewing all this footage? What do you take away from participating in this project?
On a personal level, it was intense because it was so violent and we were immersed in it. We were reliving that day every day for 6 months as we produced it. And in particular, our editors, Dimitri Cavan and Natalie Renault. And Dimitri has been pretty open about dreaming this footage as well. Another thing he said, he's a refugee to the United States from a former Soviet country. And he's asking himself, am I returning to where I came from, you know, to authoritarianism and political violence? So it definitely affected us. For me, you know, because it's unfiltered, it's really raw, it's visceral. It's almost like you're there with the rioters, standing beside them as they're carrying this out. And so you understand what brought them there, their grievances, what they believe their sort of patriotic duty is there. And this is the disinformation and the lie that has been fed to them for months. And so you really get to see the effect of that irresponsibility politically, you know, in the real world.
That's Malachy Brown, senior producer with the New York Times Visual Investigations team. He co-directed and produced Day of Rage. Malachy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
And the documentary Day of Rage is on the shortlist for an Oscar.